There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space, and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 26, titled Shadow Play. This episode was written by Charles Beaumont, directed by John Brom, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant, Bernard Herrmann, and Fred Steiner. In the cast were Dennis Weaver, Harry Towns, Wright King, and William Edmondson. Its original air date was May 5th of 1961. And as always, you can watch this on Paramount Plus or the DVDs or Blu-rays if you have the ability to buy the Blu-rays. As I always say, buy the Blu-rays for the crispness and clearness of picture and sound. So, with that being said, as always, there are spoilers ahead. So, if you haven't seen this episode since Ronald Reagan first got into office, or if you haven't seen it since it originally aired, maybe pause this podcast, go watch the episode, come back and listen to the rest of the podcast, because there are spoilers ahead. As always, I look forward to your feedback, so if you have any suggestions about casting or thoughts on any previous or future episodes of the Twilight Zone podcast, please email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I always love to hear your feedback. So with that, let's get into the opening narration. Adam Grant, a nondescript kind of man, found guilty of murder and sentenced to the electric chair. Like every other criminal caught in the wheels of justice, he's scared, right down to the marrow of his bones. But it isn't prison that scares him. The long, silent nights of waiting, or the slow walk to the little room, or even death itself. It's something else that holds Adam Grant in the hot, sweaty grip of fear. Something worse than any punishment this world has to offer. Something found only in the Twilight Zone. So the episode opens with Dennis Weaver playing Adam Grant in a courtroom in the defense table, at the defense table with his lawyer. And the jury comes in, the lights come up, and the judge asks the jury foreman, have they reached a verdict? The jury says yes, they find him guilty of murder. The judge sentences him to death in the electric chair, to which Adam Grant, throughout the course of the proceedings, mouths the words that the judge and the foreman of the jury say. And once it's read and sentences prescribed, Adam Grant starts to scream and say, you can't kill me again, I won't let you kill me again. And he starts screaming at the district attorney and the man from the press who is there, who are covering the case and trying the case, respectively. He starts yelling at him that it's a dream and everything is, this is wrong and you can't kill him because if you kill him, then everything will cease to exist and no one will exist anymore. And it's all a dream. And then, of course, they haul him away. And, if you watch any sort of court proceedings, in any sort of day and age, movies, TV, or in real life, if you've ever seen any court videos, stuff like this actually happens. People actually will scream and lash out and cry and, you know, bang on tables and just go crazy because they know their life is over. Whether they did it or not, it's irrelevant. But the outbursts do happen, so this isn't something that's out of the ordinary. What is out of the ordinary is that this is an episode that you see basically two different storylines take place, and it's not normal for a normal episode of The Twilight Zone. Normally you follow one character or a set of characters going through the episode, trying to figure out what the problem is or why they are where they are, how they wound up in the situation, how they get out of the situation, what have you. But in this situation, this episode veers into two different storylines, so to speak. You have an A storyline and a B storyline. The A storyline, of course, being Adam Grant and him waiting for midnight for the execution to take place. But then we also follow the district attorney and the newspaper editor / reporter who was covering the trial of Adam Grant. We followed their little storyline dealing with, was Grant right? Was he wrong? Did he do it? Did he not? Can we get a stay of execution for him to see if what he is saying is correct and is going to happen? And it's, you know, we don't see this in other episodes of The Twilight Zone, so this one is kind of different in that respect. So we see Adam Grant in his cell on death row waiting to be executed at midnight. Now, presumably if the trial had gone on at, say, 3 p.m., he would have been waiting from 3 p.m. to approximately 9 p.m. when we picked this up, his storyline anyway. So he's been away for a few hours now, and he's getting more and more tense and nervous about it. And we come to find out that he's getting more and more tense and nervous about it just because he hates being electrocuted, because he's been electrocuted many times before. Because every night he has a dream, and every dream is the same dream. He is convicted of murder, sentenced to death by electric chair, put in a cell, and every night about 9 o'clock the district attorney comes to see him. And every night, the district attorney doesn't get the call into the governor in time to give him a stay of execution. And every night, Adam Grant gets executed. And every night, he has the same dream again. But we're not quite there yet, are we? We're not. So let's go back. So Grant is talking to Jiggs, who is another prisoner on death row across from him, who is sort of playing devil's advocate with Grant the entire time, you know, saying things like, you know, well, if this is a dream, then, you know, what are we doing here? How did we get here? And, you know, if you tell the governor this, you know, he'll think you're a, you know, he'll think you're a psycho, and you can get out on a psycho, you know, allowance, because they're not going to hang someone who's off their rocker, so to speak. You know, they're not going to fry someone who is having a mental breakdown. So maybe you could get out that way. And of course, you know, Jiggs doesn't believe Adam Grant when he says, you know, hey, this is all a dream. I'll wake up and you'll all be gone. Or if you electrocute me, you know, you'll all be gone. You'll all cease to exist, because you only exist because I dream that you exist. And, of course, Jiggs doesn't believe him, and about this time, Grant starts looking toward the door, where Jiggs is like, you know, are you waiting for someone? And he said, yeah, the district attorney ought to be arriving shortly. And lo and behold, the district attorney, after speaking with the editor of the paper who comes to, let's backtrack. The side story, or the B story of the episode, is the district attorney is sitting at home. His wife is cooking steaks for dinner. There's a knock at the door. It's the editor of the newspaper who is slobbering drunk because he thinks that Adam Grant might be onto something. And even if he isn't, it's worth getting him a small stay of execution to at least figure out if what he says is correct. You know, if he goes to the electric chair, everyone will cease to exist. So, in his drunken ability, he somewhat convinces the DA to at least go talk to Adam Grant. Meanwhile, the district attorney's wife isn't having any of it. She says, dinner's in the oven, I'm going to bed. And here's where the stories collide again. The district attorney goes to see Grant right after 9 o'clock, like Grant said he would. He comes in, they have a talk. Of course, the district attorney doesn't really believe him. He tries to poke holes in the story, but Grant says, you know, that you exist because I dream you exist. And that's all I can tell you. You know, have you ever had a dream where you were falling and, or, you know, you were running from something or scared of something and you wake up and you're scared and screaming and sweating? And he says, that's the same dream I've had every night. And this somewhat convinces the district attorney, but not quite fully. So the district attorney goes back home. But before he goes home, Grant says, I'll tell you I'm not lying because your wife was cooking steaks for dinner. When you get home, there will be something else in the oven. District attorney gets home. The reporter is still there. He goes to look in the oven. And lo and behold, it's no longer steaks, it's now a roast. And so time is ticking. The wife wakes up because she couldn't sleep anyway. She's still, you know, tore up about all this too. The newspaper editor finally convinces the DA to call the governor and see about getting a stay of execution. But as we find out, it's too little too late, and we see them throw the switch on Adam Grant, electrocuting him. And we see things start to disappear around the DA and the editor in the room. We cut to black, fade in, and we see Adam Grant sitting again at the table in the courtroom, about to hear the verdict from the jury of the foreman, as well as the sentence passed down by the judge. And in this particular dream, Jiggs is now the judge. The priest that came to visit with Grant before he was taken to the electric chair is now the press, and so on and so forth. So everyone just keeps changing roles in this dream, but he keeps having the same dream over and over and over again. And that ends the episode. So with that, let's get into the closing narration. We know that a dream can be real. But whoever thought that reality could be a dream? We exist, of course, but how and in what way? As we believe, as flesh and blood human beings? Or are we simply parts of someone's feverish, complicated nightmare? Think about it, and then ask yourself, do you live here, in this country, in this world, or do you live instead in the Twilight Zone? So, I realize that was a sort of slapdash and overly simplified plot of the episode that I gave, and there's a reason for that. Actually, there's two reasons. Number one, if I were to tell you everything that happened in the episode, just telling me, I might as well just read the episode script word for word, because it bears watching. And secondly, I didn't, you know, go into a whole lot of detail because I really just want you to watch the episode. Just watch the episode. It's a great episode. But now with that being said, it's a Charles Beaumont written episode transcribed for the screen by Rod Serling. So, if you feel like you've seen something similar to this before, you definitely have. It was in season one's Perchance to Dream, which was also one of my personal favorite episodes. Go back and watch that. It's in season one, episode 9, starring Richard Conte. Now, it's also a great episode, but it's a great companion piece to this episode. Also written by Charles Beaumont, because if you remember in that episode, one of the things we discussed was that Charles Beaumont wrote this episode, or wrote that story that was turned into that episode, because he would actually dream in sequence. If you remember, Perchance to Dream was about a man with a heart condition who keeps having the same dream, or sorry, the a dream in sequence in serial form, where and he has a heart condition where if he gets too excited, his heart will burst and he will die. He'll have a heart attack, and he keeps having this series of dreams where this woman is trying to kill him at a carnival. And it's a fantastic episode. I know, again, that's a very simplified version of the episode, or you know, overview of the episode, but go back and watch it. It's a fantastic episode, fantastically done, very well acted, very well shot. It's one of the creepier, to me, episodes of The Twilight Zone. It's also one of my favorites. It's definitely in my top 10. This episode is also a very good episode. It's not maybe in my top 10. It's probably in my top 25, possibly. Mostly because Dennis Weaver really sells it, but the ensemble cast is also very good as well. But the idea is fantastic. Also, if you want another companion piece to this episode, watch the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. Very good. Also about a man that's reliving the same thing over and over and over again. Both very good. So, Perchance to Dream from Season 1, Episode 9, or Groundhog Day, both good companion pieces to this episode of The Twilight Zone. Now, there are different things about this episode that sort of make you wonder. Now, of course, he says it's a dream, and he says that, you know, it happens every night. But is it really a dream? Or could he actually be in a coma, perhaps? And this keeps replaying and replaying and replaying and replaying over again. It's a possibility. Or he could have had somewhat of a mental breakdown. And there's a theory in psychology, and it's called the solipsism theory, which is technically an extreme form of skepticism or even narcissism, and it's the idea that the person, be it you, be it me, you know, if it's you, it's you, if it's me, it's me, the person holds the idea that they are the only conscious being in existence, and everything around them is not real but has been made up in their mind. So solipsism, the theory of solipsism, could be at play in this episode. Certainly something else to think about. Or it could just be that it's a really awesome story written by a fantastically talented writer transcripted for the screen by another very talented writer, directed well by John Brom, and acted well by Dennis Weaver and the rest of the cast. It's whatever you like it. But I like it a lot. And it's a very good episode. It's definitely top tier for me. Some people might consider it bottom tier. Some people may never have seen it at all. The 20 people that are listening to my voice right now, there might be one or two or five or 10 of you that have never even seen this episode. And I hope that's not true. And if it is true, I hope that changes this week. Because it's a very good episode. And it's very well done. And I think it should be seen by anyone who is a fan of The Twilight Zone. And so with that, let's get into the bios. Now, this episode was directed by John Brom, who has directed several episodes of The Twilight Zone that we've seen so far, and will direct a few more throughout the series. If you want to learn more about him, you can go back to Season 1, Episode 8, Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith, where I talked about him. He also directed Judgment Night, The Four of Us Are Dying, Mirror Image, and A Nice Place to Visit in Season 1. He directed Mr. Dingle the Strong, and this episode in Season 2. He will direct two episodes in Season 3, Person or Persons Unknown, which is a great episode, and Young Man's Fancy, which also is an episode. He directs one of my favorite from Season 4, The New Exhibit. And he directs two episodes of Season 5, You Drive and Queen of the Nile. I can't say much for You Drive, but I will say that I did enjoy Queen of the Nile. So the man has some good, he has some misses, but he's a good director overall. And certainly that's proven in this episode. So give it a look. And like I said, we've seen him before. And we'll see him again. So, you know, there's that. So let's move on to the man who would be Adam Grant. And that would be Mr. Dennis Weaver. Now, you've seen Dennis Weaver in a lot of things, especially if you're over the age of 40. You've certainly seen him in a lot of things. You may have seen him in Gunsmoke as Matt Dillon's assistant, Chester. But before that, he was born in June of 1924 and passed away only about 18 years ago in 2006 at the age of 81. So Weaver was from Joplin, Missouri, where his father worked for the local electric company. He was a gifted track and field athlete and in school and while studying for a degree in fine arts at the University of Oklahoma. During World War II, he served as a fighter pilot for the U.S. Navy. After the war, he decided to not go back into sports, but to go for a career on stage, taking drama classes at the Actors Studio in New York with his alumni, Shelley Winters, who later helped him get into films. But before he got into films, he made his Broadway debut in Come Back, Little Sheba. He also found work performing plays by Tennessee Williams in off-Broadway performances, and then with Shelley's help made his movie debut in Universal's Western Horizons West in 1952. He made a few more Western pictures, but was mainly just cast as side characters or bit characters until he landed several guest spots on Dragnet, starring Jack Webb, in 1951 going forward. His career took off after that, where he was in Gunsmoke. And then after Gunsmoke was done, he had his own short-lived television series titled Kentucky Jones. That didn't really make it, and so He was lucky enough to be casted as Marshal Sam McLeod, a lawman from Taos, New Mexico, who is who moves to New York and begins his police career in Manhattan's 27th Precinct, wearing his cowboy hat and sheepskin jacket. This was a series, for anyone that doesn't know it, sort of like Columbo, where it wasn't actually like a TV series. It was just a string of made-for-TV movies that were set so many per year, kind of like a season of a TV show, but they were movies instead of a television, actual television program. Now, after McLeod took off, this also led to him getting cast in a movie in 1971 titled Duel, directed by a then relatively obscure director named Steven Spielberg. And he is fantastic in it, by the way. Duel, if you've never seen it, is a fantastic made-for-TV movie, basically, about a man who is being menaced by a truck driver in a big rig on his way. I can't remember what the actual plot of the movie is, but the whole movie is this guy being menaced and harassed by a truck driver in a big rig that you never see. The driver, that is. He also, during this time, served as president of the Screen Actors Guild from 1973 to 1975. He was in the forefront of environmental activism and a proponent of alternative energy and recycling. Past Gunsmoke and McLeod, he did some more television and movie work, but never really found the success that he had. The closest he came was playing Buffalo Bill Cody in Lonesome Dove the series in 1994. But he sadly never gained as much notoriety as he had in McLeod, Duel, Gunsmoke, or, of course, The Twilight Zone. Sadly, although he was a great talent, this was only his only episode of The Twilight Zone, and unfortunately passed away at the age of 81 in 2006 after complications from cancer. So, that sucks, but he was a fantastic actor. And if you watch any of his work, you'll see that he actually is very talented and he deserved more than what he actually got. Now, the man who would be the district attorney is no stranger to us on The Twilight Zone, Harry Towns. We saw him in season one's The Four of Us Are Dying, where he played the main character, Archie Hammer. And that would be season 1, episode 13, if anyone's keeping track. If you haven't seen that episode, go watch it. It's a decent episode. It's not a great episode, but it's a pretty good one. It's definitely a decent one, so go give that a look. So we've seen Harry Towns before, and if you want to know more about him, go back to his biography where I talked about him on season 1, episode 13, The Four of Us Are Dying. He had an interesting life, so to speak. Now, let's talk about the man who would be the editor of the paper, Paul Carson, who is played by Wright King. Now, Wright King was born in 1923 and passed away at the age of 95 just a little while ago in 2018. Now, this isn't the only time we'll see this man on The Twilight Zone. He's on this episode, but he's also in season 4's of late, I think, of Cliffordville. But we're not there yet. So, he was a supporting actor Arguably less known for two of the appearances he did on The Twilight Zone, and also played Dr. Galen in Planet of the Apes, which of course was written by Rod Serling. But before he did all that, he studied theater and drama at the St. Louis School of Theater, graduating in 1941. He was then drafted into the war, where he served for 3 years with the U.S. Navy stationed in the South Pacific. After he got out, he continued his drama studies in New York at the Actors Studio and at the American Theater Wing. He made his big screen debut in 1949. A string of walk-on parts was followed by a critically acclaimed supporting role in the original Broadway production of A Streetcar Named Desire from 1947 to 1949, as well as the subsequent first motion picture he appeared in, which was A Streetcar Named Desire. He continued acting in small roles in movies and television, and continuing his stage performances here and in Europe until 1987, when he decided to retire from acting, when he and his wife June retired to Portland, Oregon, and then moving to Woodland Hills, California, where he died at the age of 95 in 2018. And last but not least, let's talk about the man who would be Jiggs, Mr. William Edmondson. And it'll be a short thing because we've seen this man before. Now, I know what you're saying to yourself, Bill, where have we seen this guy before? Where have you seen this man before? Well, I tell you where you've seen this man before. He played the bartender in season 1, episode 12, What You Need, about the little man who had what everyone needed, including murder. Just kidding. It's a great episode. Season 1, episode 12, What You Need. You should go watch it. It's a fantastic episode as well. But we do discuss Mr. William Edmondson in that episode. And, of course, this one and that one are the only two episodes of The Twilight Zone that he was in. And he is a great character actor who sadly passed away at the age of 76 in 1979. He was born in 1902. So, sorely missed. Great character actor. Definitely did well in this episode of The Twilight Zone, as he did playing the bartender in a very small role in season 1, episode 12. So with that, let's move on to trivia for the episode. The title, Shadow Play, refers to the ancient art of shadow play or shadow puppetry, using opaque figures that cast shadows on clear curtains. Such entertainment is known in countries throughout the world and is present in theaters and by traveling troupes. The song that Coley on Death Row is playing on the harmonica is Red River Valley. I'm sure anyone who listened to any Western or watched any Western shows knows that song for sure. This episode was remade and aired as a segment of the 1985 to 1989 television series of The Twilight Zone. The remake holds closely to the plot of the original episode, in which a man on death row claims that he is living a recurring dream, and that when he's executed, it ends the dream and all the people in his dream world will cease to exist. And in that episode, he was played by Peter Coyote. So if you are a fan of the 80s Twilight Zone, give it a look. I haven't really seen too many of the 80s Twilight Zones, but to me, they just don't hold the magic that the old ones do. But maybe I'm just a, you know, salty old curmudgeon. But we might get there one day. I'm not sure yet. We'll see. And lastly, the musical score is the same score used in the episode 22, which is another season 2 episode, and also a great episode. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Now, there's only one quote-unquote goof in this episode, and it's not really a goof, because if you watch the episode, the DA and Adam Grant both say that, you know, the reason this is a dream also is because he's making everything up in his head based on what he's seen in movies and television programs. You know, no one is convicted of murder and sentenced in the same day and executed in the same day that he was tried and convicted. So, with that being said, the goof in this episode is that the judge asks Adam Grant to stand after the jury foreman reads the sentence. In reality, the defendant would have been asked to stand before the sentence is read. But again, this is Adam Grant having a dream where his dreams are based on television shows and movies that he's seen. So that part could be easily explained away as just a glitch of the dream, so to speak. So with that, let's go on to the likes and dislikes of this episode. Well, I'll tell you, I like this episode. It is definitely one of the most esoteric and ethereal episodes of The Twilight Zone. It's a fantastic episode. If you've never seen it, go watch it. Go watch it now. It's a great episode. Dennis Weaver is definitely very good in it, as are William Edmondson and Wright King and everybody. Everybody's great in this episode. It's directed well. It's really just a good episode. And if you want to watch companion pieces to it, watch season 1's episode 9, Perchance to Dream, and the movie Groundhog Day if you're looking for something else to do on a Sunday evening. With that being said, I really like this episode. I really wish this was one of the ones that could have been an hour long and we could have seen 2 or 3 different dream sequences of this, you know, with the different characters moving around. I think that would have been fantastic to see instead of just the last, you know, 15 or 20 seconds of the episode where Jiggs is now the judge and, you know, the priest is now the editor of the paper, so to speak, and all that. I'd love to see 2, if not 3 different iterations of the same dream and seen that through Adam Grant's eyes. I think that would have been fantastic for an hour-long episode. But it is also, to me, one of the stronger episodes, especially from season 2, which is crazy to say because there's been a lot of strong episodes in this season. But especially in this last run of episodes, minus next week's episode, which we'll get into in a second, the latter half of season 2 is a phenomenal set of episodes, and this one fits in like a glove. You know, no shoehorning necessary to fit this one in the lineup, indeed. Dislikes, this just that it was longer. I wish it was an hour. It would have been fantastic. Even more fantastic than it was. Should have been an hour. There you go. What are your likes or dislikes, though? If anyone has any thoughts on this, write me. DimensionsTZPodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Did you hate it? Did you love it? Do you hate Dennis Weaver and wish he was dead? Oops, too late, he already is. Do you wish he was still alive and still acting? Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Beyond that, let's go to casting. So if this episode were to be remade and Hollywood, the entity of Hollywood, were to call me and ask me for my thoughts on who should be in this episode, well, I'll tell you right now. For Adam Grant, I'd like to see Joaquin Phoenix, but Joaquin Phoenix as a little more subdued than he normally is. He's a fantastic actor, and I think he would do well to be Adam Grant. I think he can play that sort of manic, sort of at the end of his rope sort of energy that he kind of just almost like he seems to have in regular life, and I think it would translate well to this small screen role. So with that, Joaquin Phoenix. Now, for Jigs, I'm going to throw out a name that probably half of you don't know, and by half I mean 10 of you, and 10 of you may know. And if you don't know, you need to look up this man and watch everything he's done. Mr. Delroy Lindo as Jigs. If you've never heard of him, look him up. You've seen him 100 times, you just don't know it. And if you do know who he is, you know I'm not wrong. The man's a fantastic actor. For the district attorney, I would go with William H. Macy, because why not? And for the editor of the paper, I would go with Sean William Scott. Now, I know what you're going to say. Why are you putting Stifler in a role in the Twilight Zone? Well, I'll tell you why. Because if you've never seen anything other than, like, the American Pie movies and stuff like that that he's done, he's actually done some actual dramatic roles, and they're actually very good. He's actually a decent actor. So let's give him a chance to actually be a decent actor and put him in this role. As always, I welcome your thoughts to who you might think would be in this episode and be good. Write to me, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Now for the moral or philosophy, I don't even know if there necessarily is one. Just due to the whole, the highbrow, high art nature of this episode, the esoteric, ethereal, craziness that is this episode. I've got nothing. I say just enjoy it for what it is. Let your mind wander for an hour or a half an hour, I should say. And come back to Earth, maybe with a little bit of a different view on the way things are, the way things could be. And maybe that's what the episode is about, and maybe that's what the moral or philosophy is to make you look at life in a different sort of way, in a way that maybe you haven't looked at it before, but it certainly deserves to be looked at. And with that, I think we can bring this episode safely in for a landing. Now, next week's episode is about a man who decides to remake the world in his own image, and we see the aftermath. So Mr. Shelley Berman will be in a little episode titled The Mind and the Matter. So stay tuned for that in next week's episode. As again, I thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate each and every one of the 20 of you that have listened to me. And I appreciate all of you. Thank you for everything. And have a good week. Good night, everybody.